Okay, so let's continue in our journey of great Jewish faith. There is a Zemer on Shabbos. One of the Zmiris that we sing is describes Shabbos as being fenced in by roses. The Lashon of the Zemer is Kasheshanim Suga. I think it's in the Zemer of Hashemer Shabbos Abeinim Abbas. Anyone ever sing that? Okay, so it says Kasheshanim Suga, which means that it's hedged in by roses. Shabbos is sort of like fenced in by a hedge of roses. What does that mean, that Shabbos is fenced in by a hedge of roses? So Rav Mardechai Gifter, who is Rosh Yeshiva of Telz, he explains it as follows. He says that, let's say there was a hedge of roses. Let's say there was, let's say in your front yard, in order to get past, from the sidewalk to your house, you could either like walk around and get around the hedge of roses, or you could just walk right over it. It's not like that big. It's like, let's say, a 1 foot hedge of roses. I could theoretically step on it and trample it. It's not like it's a big iron fence that I can't get through. Why wouldn't I? What would stop me from trampling on the hedge of roses to get to the front yard?
Thorns.
Hmm? Thorns, okay, that's
beauty
true.
Of the look.
What?
The beauty of the rose,
exactly. That you have to appreciate a rose. If you appreciate, this is a beautiful bush, these are beautiful roses, I don't want to step on it. It's too beautiful for me to destroy it. So I'd rather like walk around it than step over it. That's the only thing that would keep a person from walking over the hedge of roses. And this, says Rav Gifter, is what Shabbos is. Shabbos is theoretically, it's not impossible on a physical level to be Mechal Shabbos. Right? There are many people that do, unfortunately. Why would I not be Mechal Shabbos? What would stop me from, let's say, taking out my iPhone on Shabbos and checking my text, checking my email? Physically, nothing. I could do it. It's easy. It's right by my bed. It's plugged in. I could do it. The only thing that would really prevent me from doing it, besides, of course, fear of God, is the fact that I appreciate the beauty of Shabbos. The beauty of Shabbos keeps the people that keep Shabbos from not violating it. It's too beautiful. I don't want to destroy it. Theoretically, I could. There's nothing stopping me, but and people do. The people that do, just pick up their phones on Shabbos and text, they're not necessarily terrible people. They just don't have an appreciation for what Shabbos is. If they would have been given the appreciation of really what Shabbos is, then they wouldn't step on Shabbos, much like a person that maybe a person doesn't care about roses, he doesn't mind stepping on it, but a person that's sophisticated and cultured enough to know that this is a rose is chashav, you don't just trample on it for nothing. So that is that would keep us from violence. So it's basically a very important yesod for us to know, and for ourselves, and it's also important for us to know for our children. I know I'm the only one in this room that I know of that has children, but someday, Mitzvah Hashem, everybody will have children, believe it or not. And when you have children, it's important to remember this, because if you make Shabbos for your kids a beautiful time of the week, and there's good food, and there's good vibes in the house, and it's not tense, and it's just and it's a chill, and people, and you say Dvar Teres, and you sing, and you have a good time, and you say Divrei Torah, so then your children will grow up and hopefully, they'll keep Shabbos also, and they'll keep Shabbos the way that you kept Shabbos, because they appreciate the beauty of Shabbos, and they appreciate that it is hedged in by roses, that it's so beautiful that I don't want to be the one that destroys it. And the opposite is true also, of course, that if a person, very often kids that go off the Derech and the Mechal Shabbos, they come from very nice homes, but they never maybe were, not generalizing for every case, but very often they just didn't feel anything special on Shabbos. Maybe there was tension in the house on Shabbos. Maybe there was fighting. Maybe, it was just weird or whatever. And so they don't have anything with Shabbos. So if they don't have anything with Shabbos, so then it's not so much their fault per se. Obviously, you know, everybody has bechir to do whatever they want, but it's, you almost can't blame people that if they were not given the full beauty of Shabbos, and then you're wondering, hey, how come this? How come they're not so into Shabbos? That might be a place to start your exploration. Okay, let's see another quote. I'll show you. I don't think I showed you the picture of that quote. Let me see if I could find it quickly. Kashmir Shabbos?
No, the where it's it's Hedgin and the Roses is in
yeah, that yeah, song? Yeah, I think so. So this was the picture. This is a Mordechai Gifter, and this is a hedge of roses. Okay. Let's see another quote. This is one of my favorites. And it ties in nice with what we were just talking about. I'm sure we all heard of Rabbi Avigdor Miller. Rabbi Avigdor Miller was a great Talmud Chacham, a great tzaddik. He lived from 1908 to 2001. And he had there are many things to be said about him. He was brilliant. He wrote books on history. He wrote commentaries to the Torah. He wrote, he was very, very deep. His tapes, before CDs and MP3s were popular, there were tapes. And he was one of the first people to really popularize spreading Torah through the medium of a tape. And he would number his tapes, so you can order a specific tape number, and many would be like, people would subscribe all over the world. He had a lot of Talmidim. He was like very cutting edge of the time of spreading today. There's Torah Anytime and all these websites that, you know, can spread Torah very quickly, but this is a little bit less viral, but it was very effective, and many people listened to his tapes and gained a lot and considered themselves his Talmidim just through listening and growing from his Das Torah. One of the things that he was well known for was that he had a very palpable and intense love of Hashem. Now, you know, there is a mitzvah in the Torah, we say it every morning and every night, Ve'ahavta es Hashem le'kecha, that you're supposed to love Hashem. You're supposed to love Hashem. Did you ever wonder, like, what does that mean to love? How do you love Hashem? Like, what, you send him a box of chocolates, you send him a Hallmark card, what does it mean you to love Hashem? It's a question. I mean, it's an open question, how to accomplish that mitzvah. It's obviously a feeling. You have to feel love to him, but how do you stimulate that feeling of love, right? When it comes to men and women, there's different ways of creating an experience that you eventually could love and appreciate the other person, but how do you do it? So Rav Avigdor Miller would say that a way of creating a feeling of love for God was by declaring openly, I love you, Hashem. By a person saying, you talk to Hashem and you just say to him, I love you, Hashem. That itself is a way to like open up your heart to get the love coursing through your veins in loving Hashem. He says, simply saying those words, even if one does not yet feel it, will lead to a great outpouring of love for him. Sometimes you got to fake it till you make it, right? Sometimes I don't want to bring it too close to, you know, dating, but sometimes if the way that a person moves a relationship forward, let's say it's sort of just like stagnant, it's just like you went out a few times with a girl and like it's just like sort of, you know, it's not moving. So some people say, all right, if it's not moving, it means it's not, you know, can't, we got to dump her and find somebody else. But Shadchanim will tell you, I think, and, you know, is that if you put yourself out a little bit more, that will create an environment that you, meaning not so much fake it, like you're not supposed to say, you're not saying to the girl you love, but you're like, the more you say like, wow, you know, you're amazing, you're, you know, I really think that, you know, I think so highly of you, things like that. If you put yourself out there and you, even if you're not totally there yet, but if you're able to like be very expressive, it stimulates the heart to move forward. And then she thinks that, you know, you're into her, and then it goes, and then it, you know, it could build. And Avigdor Miller said that that's sort of what we should be doing when it comes to Hashem. If you speak openly and you say to Hashem, I love you, even if you don't really know that you love Hashem to that degree, but just saying it will itself lead to a great outpouring of love. He was once speaking of this topic at a family bar mitzvah, and he exclaimed, he says, you mean, he was speaking to like the audience, he said, you mean you never once said, I love you, Hashem? No? Let's all say together, I love you, Hashem. I know you feel uncomfortable, but do it anyway. It's going to make a difference in your relationship. And that's a very important thing. When we want to be mekayim this mitzvah of Avas Hashem, of V'ahavtas Hashem L'gacha, and in fact, if you think that I'm like flippantly using the relationship of the mashal of a man and a woman, the Rambam says that this is what Shlomo HaMelech speaks about in Shir HaShirim. The whole Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, was composed by Shlomo HaMelech. And what is it about? It's basically, if you would read it simply, if you would just take out like a Bible, like a St. James Bible, a regular, not, you know, not Arts Girl Bible, Shir HaShirim would be almost like a graphic love story that you probably would have a hard time reading, because you think like this is not from, like I'm not supposed to be reading this, right? Because it speaks about very in graphic detail a relationship between a man and a woman, with highs, with lows, with fights, with love. And but really, if you look through at Shir HaShirim through the eyes of Chazal, which is the way Shlomo HaMelech, of course, intended it, it's not talking about a simple love. Shlomo HaMelech wasn't writing love stories. Shlomo HaMelech was writing a story of Klal Yisrael and Hashem. So it was a mashal of a man and a woman, but it's symbolizing the relationship, the unique relationship between Klal Yisrael and Hashem and the love that we have for each other. And he says, this is what Shlomo HaMelech meant in Shir HaShirim, that Ki Cheles Ava Ani, I am lovesick for you, Hashem. This is what a person is supposed to, a person that's in love with Hashem is supposed to feel. He uses a mashal, the Rambam, he says, just like if a person is infatuated with a girl. So all he does all day is think about this girl. When he wakes up in the morning, when he goes to sleep at night, when he's eating, when he's, whatever he's doing, he's playing ball, he's always like in the back or the front of his mind, he's thinking about that girl. That's what, and more so, he says, even more than that, is what a person that has love for Hashem, always thinking about Hashem. You wake up in the morning, Hashem, Maidan Lefanecha, thank you, Hashem. You go to sleep at night, thank you, Hashem. You're eating, you make a bracha, but you're always thinking on some level about Hashem. That's Avas Hashem. But the way Avigdor Miller would advise to bring this out is by saying it, I love you, Hashem. And he would start off his shiurim, and I've heard Talmidim of his, it's like almost like a mantra, like, I love you, I love you, I love you, Hashem. Like, you know, like just like the more that you're able to say it, even though it feels like a little weird, like you're talking to God, you're saying, I love you. But that's the way we're going to be able to stimulate and to really launch our love with Hashem. This is the picture. I found a picture of I love you, which is, you know, at first the people at art school were not crazy about me using this because it seems like a little bit like too, I did not put it on the cover. Originally it was supposed to even be on the cover. Yeah, it looks, but the saving grace is that the picture happened to have a capital Y. If it would have been a lowercase y, that would have been, I love you, it's probably a guy skywriting to a girl or something. But the capital Y makes it look more religious. It makes it look like you're talking to Hashem. So that's what I use in the Sura of Igna Miller, of course. Okay, let's do one more. Oh, that's a good one. Okay. Why would you think that the Torah forbids one from taking revenge? It says, Leisikam, Leisita, you're not supposed to take revenge. Somebody does something really bad to you, somebody, I don't know, he tattles on you to your Rebbe that you did something wrong and you want to get him back, so you want to, you know, or whatever you want. He messed you up somehow. So the Torah says, no, don't take revenge. Don't take revenge. Why would you think, is there a rationale for why, if we don't have to understand reasons for mitzvahs, but like if you were to try to divine why Hashem would want you not to take revenge, what would it be? What would the reason be?
Waste a lot of time.
What?
It wastes a lot of time
to take revenge. Okay. Right, so you guys are like a step ahead. I would have said, you know, I would have said on a simple level that it's not all it's going to do is just make machlekas and klal yisrael. If I take revenge every time you do something wrong to me, you step on my foot, I step on your foot, then you're going to smack me, I'm going to smack you. Then, like before you know it, it's just going to be constant, you know, constant problems. Like in business, you know, you snitched on the IRS about my taxes, and I'm going to do it to you, and then your kids are going to do it to my kids. It's just going to get crazy, so just stop. Just be the man, you know, just rise to the occasion and don't take revenge. It's going to ratchet up tension and strife amongst Klal Yisrael. But the Sefer HaChinuch, which is the go-to Sefer, it's on the Tayrig Mitzvahs, the 613 Mitzvahs. We know that there are 613 Mitzvahs. That's a given. The Gemara speaks about that at the end of Maseches Makkos, meaning that's not negotiable. We know there are 613 Mitzvahs. The question that we don't know is, what are they? And to get to that magic number, there are many different rabbis that wrote classical works to try to figure out what it is. So the Rambam has his list, and the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, has his list, and the Chinuch has his list. The Chinuch goes a lot with the Rambam, but the Sefer Chinuch is the class, and so he brings the mitzvah, he brings all 600, and then he adds something really cool, the Sefer Chinuch, that he says, Mishayrish HaMitzvah. What's the understanding of behind the mitzvah? He actually gives us a rationale for why Hashem is not that he's saying this is the reason. There might be a million reasons, you know, why to blow a shofar and why to shake a lulav and why not to speak lashon hara. There could be a lot of different reasons, but he gives us a reason, or maybe more than one reason. He calls it the shorish hamitzvah, the root of the mitzvah. What is the reason behind the rationale for Hashem commanding us? So when it comes to this mitzvah of this aveira, I should say, of nekama, he says, like you guys were saying, he says that everything that happens to a person, and this is so important for us to remember, because it's hard to really actualize, but this is the truth. Whatever happens to us, whether good or bad, comes upon me from Hashem. Therefore, when someone causes another person pain or suffering, it was actually God who decreed that those woes come upon him to atone for his sins. It therefore makes no sense to take revenge upon the person who wronged you, for that person was, in fact, not the cause of your suffering. It's a very hard thing to understand, because what do you mean he's not the cause? He is the cause of my suffering. I just got a brand new car, and I saw on a video that he keyed up the side of my car, or he broke a window of my house, or he spoke terrible about me, caused me to lose my job, or got me kicked out of yeshiva. What if things happen? I mean, you know, so you're saying that that wasn't him, it was God? No, it was him. I saw him do it. Yeah, he did do it. It's true. He was just like the instrument of Hashem to make it happen. If something happens to us, if we have a bad thing that happens to us, don't blame the person who it seems is the direct cause, because everything in life comes from Hashem. Everything. Good, bad, everything in between, whatever happens to us is because Hashem wants this to happen to us. But Hashem uses different people. Now again, it's a hard thing to, so it means he's a tzaddik. He keyed up my car, but he's a tzaddik. Like, I have to go now and get it repaired for $3,000. But God, no one said he's a tzaddik. He had, obviously, the choice, like Paro had the choice. Paro didn't, Hashem wanted a nation to enslave Klal Yisrael for hundreds of years. And no one asked Paro to be the guy to volunteer for the job. He volunteered. He got in big trouble. But at the end of the day, Hashem wanted that to happen. Hashem decided that we should go down to Egypt for a couple hundred years and be slaves. That wasn't because of Paro. If it wasn't Paro, somebody else would have done it. And the same thing is true for anything that happens in our personal life. If, let's say, you're going out with a girl and somebody, you know, says something really bad to the girl about you, and she, next date, she says, you know, we can't go out anymore, I heard terrible things about you, and you go back to the guy, you want to slug him, and it's really bad. Hashem did not want you to marry that girl. But why does this guy have to be such a... That's a different story. But don't, by taking revenge against that guy, what you're doing is you're saying that it wasn't Hashem, it was him. And that's undermining the power of Hashem in the world. Because Hashem, you have to, and this is, again, I'm not saying this is an easy thing to do. It's really hard to separate the fact that we believe that Hashem is in charge, but then we also have to deal with human beings. We also have to deal with people that we work with, that we live with, that we daven with, that we, you know, and sometimes they're really nice to us. Sometimes they're not nice to us. If they're not nice to us, they're doing something that's really not, that's bad. Yeah, I want to get revenge against them. And revenge is sweet. But the Torah says, don't do it. Because if you don't do it, then you will gain so much more, and that Hashem will see that you believe in Him, that you understand that everything is ultimately from Him, and you're avoiding, you're not falling to the trap that everybody else does by slugging the, like Rabbi Chanan Wasserman used to say that when you, let's say there's a dog, and you throw a stick at the dog, a dog doesn't have the understanding of realizing that you threw a stick at him, so he should be coming and pouncing on you. What does he do instead? He pounces on the stick. The stick that hit him in the head, it starts like jumping on the stick. He doesn't realize that, you know, that the stick didn't do anything. The stick is just a stick. Hashem was the person who threw the stick. He should be the one that really, you know, the dog understands is the cause of his problems. And Lahavdil, that's what it's like with us and Hashem. Like when there's a guy that comes and does something bad to us, embarrasses us, or causes us financial loss, we tend to like right away jump on the stick. And it's not the stick. It's really Hashem is the one that, you know, and you could take this on a very far level, you know, just, you know, again, it's a little... I guess difficult to talk about it because we're in the moment right now. But like, you know, what happened on Simchas Torah with Hamas. Now Hamas are Rishon, they have to be uprooted, they have to be, but if you think that it was all Hamas and Hashem had nothing to do with it, Hashem was, you know, sleeping at the wheel and Hamas just came and he just, that's the wrong Hashkafa. The Hashkafa of the Torah is that whatever happened to us was because Hashem wanted it to happen. If the Holocaust happened, we don't know why the Holocaust happened. One thing we do know is that Hashem made a decree that this should happen. Hitler has no power, and Hamas has no power if Hashem doesn't allow something to happen. Hashem could have stopped it from happening. If he allowed it to happen, that doesn't mean to say that Hamas are, you know, shouldn't be, you know, that we shouldn't deal with them. You have to deal with them, obviously. But if the whole lesson of Simchas Torah is, okay, that we militarily we fell asleep and now we have to get revenge, we have to make sure this doesn't happen again, you're missing the point. That's not the point. The point is there's a God in the world. Hashem allowed this to happen. There's no other rhyme. There's no rational reason. Wait on. Israel knows. You see how their technology is so. They know every single person that Gaza Strip. They know exactly who's the head of the tank unit and who's the head of the Navy unit. They know every single guy in the whole Gaza Strip. They didn't know that they were planning an attack against us on this scale, that 2,000 people are going to come into Eretz Yisrael, and they didn't. They didn't know, apparently. But that's not the point. The point is that how did it happen? It happened because Hashem allowed it to happen. Hashem is sending us a message, and we have to daven, we have to do tshuva, we have to learn more, whatever it is that we have to do, each person on their own level. But it's not, don't, taking the revenge element is the least of it. If the whole takeaway is, okay, now we're going to get back at Hamas, then we're that dog that's jumping on the stick. That's not what the takeaway lesson. The takeaway lesson is that there's Hashem in the world. He's in charge, and we should not be so arrogant to think that we could, you know. And what kills me about this whole the war that I'm following, as I'm sure you are, like very, very daily, you know, daily and many times a day, is that the generals and the heads of the army and the defense department, they never mention anything about Hashem. So our forces are superior. Our forces are going to show Chama. We're going to teach them a lesson that you can't invoke Hashem's name once. You can't say that with Hashem's help we're going to, like, just say it once. Just say it. Say it before the whole war. You know, Bibi, somebody say, you know, the soldiers are saying it. They're putting on tzitzis. They're davening. They're dancing. They're singing. They're being mekabel Shabbos. But you know, they don't get it. They don't understand that the whole point of this war is that there's a God in the world. Hashem woke us up to make us feel vulnerable because we were getting arrogant. We were thinking that, you know, everything is coming to us. We're a powerful army, powerful this, and we're invincible. And we see that we're not. We're fragile. We're in Galus, and the enemies can attack us when they want to, at their will, if Hashem allows that. And so the tshuva of that is we have to remember that there is a God, and then the soldiers and everyone in Eretz Yisrael, I think many people are chosen b'tshuva now. They're putting on tefillin, they're davening, they're saying Shema Shabbos because they get it. But it's a shame that the higher ups don't, if they get it, they're not saying it publicly. Maybe it doesn't look good on the public stage to talk about God. It makes them sound like, you know, some fanatic or whatever. I'm sure maybe there's a cheshbon, but that is the bottom line. The bottom line is the revenge against Hamas is the least part of it. The least takeaway is that, and the biggest part of it is to come back to Hashem and to recognize that He's in control.
I could be wrong, but I remember this. I remember having a question. I was reading this whole revenge thing. There's one exception though, like if someone kills someone by accident.
Oh, that's a very good
one. Why is that an exception? By the time he gets to the Ibn Qat, he's allowed to kill him.
Yeah.
And I was so curious because you're not allowed for revenge, but in that case,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. There, the terror permits the Gaila Adam to take revenge. I don't know exactly. I don't know the answer to that. But there is another. I thought you were alluding to this. That there's an Arachayim HaKadosh that says that if there's one time that Hashem, that something happens and it doesn't necessarily mean that Hashem wants it, and that's if a person goes and takes somebody else's life. Let's say I go and I, this is a very big philosophical question. If let's say I go and I take out a gun and I just shoot some random person in the supermarket. Person was healthy, everything was fine. Does that mean that Hashem wanted that to happen? Or does it mean that I have the free choice to override that? The Arachayim HaKadosh says, and he brings a raya, I think it's in Barak.
That would be Hamas to us, no?
What?
That would be Hamas to us. That would just go against
the way, no? So the Arachayim HaKadosh says that a person, that then, maybe, I mean, I don't know, could be.
Hashem commanded us to take revenge on Midian.
What?
But he's saying it's on,
after Midian did,
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I mean, we definitely find precedent in the Torah to take revenge against people that, Amalek and people that do bad to us, because you have to. If you don't take revenge sometimes, at least nationally, you know, you're done. You have to be able to retaliate. That's not, if you would just say Hamas, sorry, says Lasikam, we're not going to touch you. That's not a good idea, obviously. But my point is that that's not the point, that we get obsessed with the stick and we forget about the Hashem who threw the stick at us to wake us up, to galvanize us, to do tshuva, to take personal lessons, And that is very, very important to remember as we're going tomorrow on the buses or whatever, you know, to Washington. Don't start getting, you know, into the idea that we need to do this because politically this, we're going because this is what Klal Yisrael is doing, and it's hopefully will be Ma'ar Rachmei Shemayim, but it's not, if we're thinking that we're politically trying to, like, you know, fix things or whatever and get back, and that's not the right, I wouldn't waste a day on that. That's not the right thing to do. Okay. Shkoyach.